Good evening and welcome to the local news. Today is Friday, May 10th. I'm Leanne Ackerman reporting for KMUD. In tonight's news, longtime Telegraph Ridge Fire Chief passes the torch. Third annual Round Valley History Day. And the KMUD News Sports Report. Stay tuned. News on those stories and more coming right up. Peter Losky of Telegraph Ridge Volunteer Fire passed the role of chief off to Tanner Spees on April 28th, Serenity Wood reports.
On Sunday, April 28th, the Telegraph Ridge Volunteer Fire Department celebrated outgoing Chief Peter Losky as he passed the torch to Tanner Spees at their annual barbecue fundraiser. In his acceptance speech, Tanner Spees memorialized longtime assistant fire chief Travis Strange, who passed away in 2020 and was a beloved training instructor and key member of the department.
Thank you, Peter. Thank you, Telegraph Ridge Fire, and all the firefighters. After the birth of my son and building my house around 2007, I was called to help my community and I joined the fire department. My first fire meeting, I remember Peter and Travis Strange, Pete Giannullo, Howard Fun, Jeremy Wallace here. We had a small crew and it was really fun though. We got right into it. A lot of you know Travis Strange. He was our training officer and he was epic. The best training officer that somebody could hope for. I'd say my first experiences were with him, teaching me how to do progressive hose lays, how to throw SCBA, how to drive and pump 5533, his beloved engine, and how to just try to stay calm on the way to the fire. He told us, yeah, we're gonna make mistakes, we're gonna make more mistakes, but we're just gonna keep going at it. And he was really fun. We went to a lot of crazy calls together. The three of us too, Peter, Travis, and I were on a lot of calls together. All times of the day, wildland fires, structured fires, traffic accidents, medical calls, and sometimes the deaths of community members and loved ones. It's a serious responsibility. It's a heavy call. We've been to quite a few of them together. And we take that responsibility seriously, and we want to honor the community members we've lost. We've also lost some firefighters along the way, including Travis. We also lost Charlie Schottlaffel, one of our own firefighters, and Matthias Nicklin and Howard Fun. So we'd like to honor them today too. And yeah. So now we're in this new time, as Peter said, that we do have this property here. It's a major piece of this district and department to have a home. We have a permanent home because of your support. And this is just such an epic asset for our community. I think there's a good chance we have one of the most beautiful fire properties in possibly California. It has developed quite a bit, but we have plans to keep going. We have some pretty good visions here for how we're gonna keep making this more beautiful, more functional. And you know, we're definitely encouraging you all to get involved with any visions that you have on that. Some things that are coming up really quick here is that we are looking to get a brand new Type 6 quick attack that is based on a regional grant that we've been pursuing with the Chiefs Association, and that's coming through the McGuire State grant funding. We're looking to get that hopefully within the next year. That's going to be a massive bonus. This is going to be our first brand new engine. Likely to be our first out in our main responding engine. So it's going to be a big upgrade. I know for us, for the firefighters, it's an awesome thing to see coming, for sure. I want to say, too, that in this, as Peter said, he's going to continue as deputy chief. I want to recognize our assistant chief, Will Rogers, right here. Will Rogers and Peter, between them, have been some of the primary responders in this area for years, right? I have said, like, we see Peter goes to every call. He's going to every call, you know, almost every call in the last 28 years. If Peter is not able to go to the call, Will is usually able to go to the call. Yeah. Myself, where it's just kind of what we do, you know? And I want to say there's a part of it that we love, and we want to do it for service, but it's also just a call that... call to the duty, call to the honor, and we do it because we love our community. We love you guys. So yeah, next, I want to say, since Travis Strange, I've been the training officer. I'm passing that role today to Michael Carter, who will be our new training officer. Let's give it up for Michael Carter. Yeah. And yeah, I just want to say one more time, thank you. I think that pretty much covers... the future, right? Work with us. Let's keep going. We're also very proud to be part of the Southern Humboldt Fire culture, which is in a beautiful moment right now. There's more camaraderie going on than I've seen in my last 17 years. I'm so happy to see the other chiefs here today. You know, I have to say that through this whole process, I've gotten to be more involved with the Chiefs Association, and I've gotten the awesome guidance of my fellow chiefs who are here today. You know, thank you guys so much. Super humbled and proud to be with you. Thank you.
On April 30th, I interviewed outgoing Chief Peter Losky via Zoom.
We have been putting on this event, our annual barbecue fundraiser, for well over 10 years, maybe 15 years. So a lot of the people you saw there are the people who live in the Edwardsburg community. And I think the largest group of people who come who don't live in Edwardsburg or other firefighters. It was really heartwarming and very encouraging to see there were people there from Honeydew and Petrolia and Shelter Cove and Whale Gulch and Whitethorn and Bryceland and Redway. So many different fire departments were represented there. That property was the Edwardsburg School for many years. Southern Humboldt Unified School District closed the school, and it had been just an empty space for a while. And we saw that and thought it would make a great place for a fire station. So eventually we negotiated to buy it. Actually, we just finished paying it off, and it now belongs to the Telegraph Ridge Fire Protection District, which, the way we look at it, as we said at our fundraiser, it belongs to the community. That's the most important thing to recognize, particularly in a volunteer department, that it is completely a team group effort. It's not the type of thing you solo at, but you work with the people around you, and therefore you have to count on each other, and we do. At one point, our department was down to myself and Travis Strange and one old engine, and so that was the smallest we ever were, two of us and one old engine, but we recruited people. Some of the people who are in the department now joined in the early 2000s, so they've been in it for a long time.
So when did you first become a volunteer firefighter?
In the late 1980s, Roger Herrick bought an old engine from Redway Fire Department and put up a sign on Telegraph Ridge here saying, anybody who wants to form a fire department, come meet. I attended that meeting with that first engine he bought, and we founded the department. Roger was our founder. Of the original members, I am the last one who's still in the fire department, but there are definitely other founding members who still live in this neighborhood. And I'd like to give a shout out to Howard Trees, to Kim Marth, to Ross Poundstone, and to Whitey Fladen. When Roger stepped down as chief, Ken Reynoldson became the second chief of Telegraph Ridge. In 1997, when Ken moved away, I became the third chief, and Tanner Spies is now the fourth chief of our department.
How did it feel to pass the torch off to him?
Well, it's a combination. There's a certain sense of relief, of course. I mean, I've had a lot of responsibility for many years, but I'm also very excited about it. I would not be able to step down if I didn't feel that I had not just the right person. Tanner will be able to take this department to places I've been unable to. He has some good visions. He's got a lot of very good talents. He's better on the computer and on the internet than I am, and is modernizing our department. So we're both very excited about this. We've been working on this transfer of the leadership for a couple of years. So it isn't a sudden transition. And I will continue in the department serving in any way I can. And of course, with his permission, helping Tanner learn some of the skills that a chief needs. Tanner, even though he just became chief a couple of days ago, has been the secretary of the Southern Humboldt Chiefs Association for a long time now. So he attends all the meetings. He's the one who writes up the minutes and takes the notes. So it's only natural that now he will be a voting member as the chief. The Southern Humboldt Fire Chiefs Association meets once a month. The chiefs are working towards making it so that the fire departments are able to work even more closely together, maybe able to join together in applying for larger grants, training together. Even though we're individual fire departments, making it so that we all can work as one large team made up of different departments. And it will definitely improve the ability of all the departments to serve and defend the people in Southern Humboldt.
For KMUD News, I'm Serenity Wood.
Ray Hamill brings us details of all the big stories from a busy week in local sports in this report.
The Ferndale Wildcats ended a near two-decade wait for a conference championship in baseball last weekend. Hello and welcome to this week's KMUD News Sports Report. I'm Ray Hamill with HumboldtSports.com. We'll have more on that story in just a moment, and we'll also be looking at all of the other big local sports stories this week, including all the latest high school baseball and softball games, news of three Humboldt County players who have received All-State honors, how one local pitcher is turning heads on the college fields, a dominating performance by an HDNL girls team at last weekend's track and field championships, and how hard work and perseverance is paying off for a Humboldt County youth baseball team. But first up, the long wait is over for the Ferndale Wildcats. The Ferndale boys continued their impressive spring by claiming the school's first Little Four Conference Championship in baseball since 2005. Last weekend, the Cats swept a conference-ending doubleheader against St. Bernard's, holding the defending Little Four champions to just one run over the two games and winning 4-1 and 3-0. The two schools came into the final doubleheader at Ferndale High School deadlocked at the top of the standings and with the conference championship up for grabs. But with history on the line, it was the host school that prevailed. Prescott Langer and Levi Dixon each pitched a complete game for the victories, while shortstop Parker Pryor set the tone on another strong defensive performance by the team. The Crusaders had won 15 of the previous 16 conference championships, including the past five, but the pennant is headed to Ferndale this spring after a composed performance by a group of determined players. The Cats, who won 4 of 5 games against St. Bernard's this year, have remarkably lost just once all season and are now 16-1-1. Both teams will now turn their attention to the North Coast Section playoffs, which get underway next week. The Wildcats are the top-ranked team in Division 6 and are guaranteed at least one home playoff game after winning the league title. Although if they receive the top seed as expected, they would host all of their postseason games. The South Fork Cubs also should contend for the Division 6 section title. The Cubs, who are ranked number 3 in the bracket, behind only Ferndale and Point Arena, swept their final Little Four doubleheader against Hoopa last weekend, winning 14-0 and 7-2. St. Bernard's, meanwhile, is ranked number 7 in Division 5. The NCS brackets and seeds will be announced this weekend. The Big 5 champion McKinleyville boys should also receive a high seed in the Division 4 baseball bracket and are ranked number 1 in the division after winning 12 straight games to close out the regular season. As conference champions, the Panthers also are guaranteed at least one home playoff game. So too are the St. Bernard's and Del Norte softball teams. The Crusaders won the Little Four Championship 2 weeks ago, while the Del Norte girls finally clinched the Big Five Championship with a doubleheader sweep over Arcata in Crescent City on Wednesday. The Warriors won both games by identical 10-0 scores in 5 innings. Elsewhere in local high school baseball and softball this week, the HDNL postseason Charles Lakin tournaments got underway on Tuesday. The softball tournament, which is being played at the Arcata Sports Complex, saw McKinleyville defeat Hoopa 11-0 in their tournament opener, while Fortuna shut out Ferndale 7-0. In the baseball tournament, which is being played at the Arcata Ballpark, the South Fork boys lost their opening game against Eureka 10-1, while St. Bernard's edged Fortuna later in the night by a score of 4-3. Both tournament championship games will be played on Friday night. In local college softball, meanwhile, former Hoopa Warrior Tatiana Colgrove has been turning some heads in her first year playing for Mendocino College. The 2023 Hoopa graduate enjoyed an outstanding freshman campaign with the Eagles and has received all state honors, as well as being named the Golden Valley Conference Pitcher of the Year. Colgrove, who was one of four former HDNL players to play for the Eagles this year, made 26 appearances in the circle and finished with an impressive 144 strikeouts in 141 innings. She also allowed just 51 walks and finished with a record of 10-9 with one save and an ERA of 2.63. Fortuna graduate Kelsey Hall also was named to the GVC All-Conference second team for Mendocino in her sophomore season with the team. Closer to home, former Eureka Logger Megan Hampton was named to the GVC All-Conference first team after an impressive freshman season playing for College of the Redwoods. In local high school basketball, three HDNL players received All-State recognition this week. On Sunday, Cal High Sports named their All-State teams, with St. Bernard's Alayla Florvillis and Madeline Shanahan and Arcata's Nora Talty all included among the 16 All-State Division IV players. Florvillis also was recently named the Cal High Sports Division IV State Player of the Year after leading the Crusaders to the HDNL's first ever state championship in the sport. And the best is yet to come for Florvillis, who is just a junior. Shanahan and Talty are both seniors. And that wasn't all for the multi-talented Florvillis. The SB junior also is a standout track and field athlete and was in action at last weekend's league championships, which were held at McKinleyville High School. Florvillis was one of several multiple winners on the day, taking first in both hurdles races as well as in the high jump. Eureka's Sequoia Ashby and Elizabeth Raminger each also won three individual events on the way to leading the Eureka girls to a dominating performance, which saw them cruise to a team league championship. The Loggers scored a remarkable 201 points, which was more than 100 points better than the second place team, Arcata. In the boys' competition, Del Norte's sophomore Deacon Hanks won all four of his events and led the Warriors to a team championship. Fortuna's Russell Pascasio also won two events, placing first in both the high jump and the triple jump. And finally this week, hard work and perseverance is paying off for one local youth baseball team. The Northern Humboldt Steelheads 10U team is enjoying an outstanding year in travel ball and has now won three straight tournaments, including two recent tournaments in Reading. The young Steelheads played up an age group for the past 2 years and took their lumps, according to head coach Nate Combs. But all of that is now paying off for the young players, who are enjoying a memorable year. And that's this week's K-Mud News Sports Report. Until next time, I'm Ray Hamill with HumboldtSports.com.
Turning to Mendocino, K-Mud's Matt Lefevre has the latest Mendocino County headlines in this report.
This is Matt Lefevre with the headlines out of Mendocino County for Friday, May 10th, 2024. First, with an urgent public health announcement. Mendocino County Public Health has announced that HIV and syphilis are impacting the Mendocino County community. HIV, the virus that leads to AIDS, poses a risk if you had sexual contact or shared injection drugs with a partner whose health history is unknown. For community members concerned, testing resources are available. Visit takemehome.org for more information or contact Patty at McHaven by calling 707-272-9811 for free rapid HIV testing. Planned Parenthood in Ukiah is another vital resource. Call 707-462-4303 to schedule an appointment or walk in for testing without prior arrangement. Medical guidance indicates that early action is critical. Ask about post-exposure treatment, which must begin within 72 hours. Consult a medical provider for guidance and support. The press release announcing this alarming trend was slim on specifics. When we asked public health as to the specifics regarding the increase of HIV and syphilis, they replied, quote, "Overall, public health has noticed a significant increase in HIV cases this year. Public health cannot provide exact numbers because it could potentially identify the individuals. Mendocino County has had 24 new cases of syphilis in the last 5 months, unquote. We asked public health what demographics seem to be most affected by this alarming trend, and they replied, unfortunately, quote, public health cannot provide demographics or populations that seem to be most affected. Again, this could potentially identify the individuals, unquote. Public health attributes this increase in HIV and syphilis to, quote, unprotected sex with multiple partners, unquote. And now to Ukiah, when on May 8, 2024, the Ukiah Police Department made a significant discovery during a routine stop on Airport Park Boulevard. The driver of the vehicle, identified as Robert Gardner, became the focal point of their investigation. Upon approaching the vehicle, officers observed a controlled substance in plain view inside the vehicle, leading to a thorough search. Officers then uncovered a loaded Charter Arms 38 special revolver stashed under Gardner's driver's seat, alongside drug paraphernalia and a digital scale. Officers would learn that Gardner is in fact a convicted felon with a previous violation of the Health and Safety Code and was actively prohibited from possessing firearms or ammunition. Consequently, Gardner was arrested on multiple charges related to these discoveries and taken to the Mendocino County Jail. And now a unique story from Ukiah. Yesterday, Thursday, May 9th, a small group of protesters gathered on a busy corner in Ukiah to voice their opposition to circumcision, a long practice procedure involving the removal of foreskin from the penis. Our reporter at the scene had the opportunity to speak with David Atkinson, the president and CEO of a group known as the Blood-Stained Men, who stood at the intersection of Perkins Street and Orchard Avenue wearing a striking white outfit with a blood red stain around the crotch area, symbolizing what they believe is the violence caused by circumcision. Atkinson said, quote, "We are on a two-week tour of Northern California to spread foreskin awareness and prevent violence against children," unquote. Another protester referred to himself as Brother K and was the founder of Bloodstained Men, shared that he had first demonstrated against circumcision publicly 44 years ago in Eureka, California. Interestingly, the American Academy of Pediatrics official policy acknowledges the medical benefits of circumcision, but does not outright recommend the procedure, highlighting the ongoing debate surrounding the issue. For those interested in learning more or joining the discussion, the Bloodstained Men will be demonstrating tomorrow, May 11, 2024, in McKinleyville at the intersection of Central Avenue and School Road between 2 p.m. and 4 p.m. And now with another advisory from Mendocino County Public Health. Residents of the Point Cabrillo Highlands water system should be on alert that a boil water notice affecting all 21 service connections has been issued due to a main break caused by an accident related to wind. Repairs are underway, and once completed, the system will be sanitized with follow-up sampling required for 2 consecutive days, lifting the notice by May 14th at 12 p.m. For more information or specific details, contact Donna Feiner at 707-937-0720 or contact DFEINER at mcn.org. And that's the latest from Mendocino County. I'm Matt Lefevre in Hoplin, reporting for KMUD News.
The third annual Round Valley History Day took place on Saturday, May 4th, at the Methodist Church in Covelo, California. Participants gathered to share oral histories, photographs, documents, portraits, and more. Jen Bercacci reports.
I'm here at the third annual Round Valley History Day with Donna Van Bushnell, one of the founders. Donna, thanks so much for taking the time to talk with us. What inspired you to start Round Valley History Day?
Well, I was approached with the idea from Mitzi Frazier, and we, for years, have shared history. And she has some history from that I was always intrigued with, and vice versa. So she said, why don't we share our history and have a History Day in Covelo? So that's what initially started it.
And we're over here at the Round Valley Methodist Church. Has this always been the location for the event?
Yes. Yes, and Mitzi said earlier today, she said, do you think we've outgrown it? And I feel there's room, you know, being here at the church, which is over 100 years old, there's a lot of history.
So that seems appropriate as a place to have a history-oriented event.
Exactly.
As we know, Covelo has a really rich and at times very painful history, so it's important for folks to be able to gather and share. People have a lot of historical documents here today. They have old newspapers, photographs. We saw some portraits today that were drawn of Native Americans here, you know, many, many years ago. We've had guest speakers. We're going to have music. And I'm curious, because you're such a history buff here in Covelo. You run this famed Facebook group, Covelo Back in the Day, super popular. Is there anything that you saw here today that you haven't seen? Or did you learn anything new you didn't know about before?
I have learned a gentleman who, last name of Cotting, had posted pictures that I had no clue there was another library, a very small library across from where the library is today, that was connected to the Women's Club. And history of Main Street and Commercial Street, there's been three different fires that have wiped out Covelo, rebuilt. And that is my interest in seeing the downtown more than anything, what used to be here, what used to be there. Mitzi and I are close, and we try to keep everything real even. You know, we just try to keep, we feel everybody is one. And that's kind of why we decided to keep it here, too, because it's the grounds here are historical, and I just, you get the vibe. I have seen some pictures today that I'm really excited to see. So I got my little camera out. I'll have those documented on the Covelo page sometime, at some point.
Yeah. And as a resident of Covelo, I can agree with you that it is amazing to see the old photographs of buildings. There's so few public buildings in Covelo today, but looking at these archives, I can tell at times there were just an incredible amount of structures.
It was booming, too.
Right. It was booming, and with the propensity for fire we have in our area and a lot of buildings being made of wood, these buildings really do just get wiped out with no trace. So it's really valuable to look
at
the photos.
It is. You think about, I mean, luckily the Cal Fire is here, but when the whole town burned, well, I don't know if it was the whole town, but in 1963 there was a huge a mercantile where, I believe, I think it's where Western Auto is, that block was this massive store, and then behind it everything burned. And I don't remember any of that. I do remember the hotel though when that burned. That was horrible. And then the whole, I guess it's the east side of town, but I feel that it's making a comeback. I think people are, you know, putting businesses in now, all the little restaurants that are mobile. I mean, if that's what they have to do, and then take them home at night. My long-term goal is to have a mini museum here that, you know, we could keep stuff in, and it's going to have to be made out of bricks. Because my fear every night not living here would be something would happen to it, you know. But that's actually a futuristic thing that we've talked about. So
thank you so much,
You're
Donna.
You're welcome. Thank you.
This has been Jen Procacci reporting for KMUD.
That's all for tonight's broadcast. Thank you for listening. Thanks to our engineer, Michael McCaskill, and thanks to our reporters, Serenity Wood, Ray Hamill, Matt Lefevre, and Jen Procacci. Reporting for KMUD, I'm Leanne Ackerman.